accession number 18822, reel 19.
George Aitchison, reel 19.
Yes. I reached the office of a harassed-looking chap who had the exhausted and resentful air of an official from whom too much is being asked. And he said, "This is terrible. Normally we just saw very few people, but now the wind of change has meant that Nigeria, Ghana, Kenya, Tanzania, everywhere you can think of, Zambia, Malaya, all of you are spewing out chaps who were recruited after the war in their mid to late 20s, where what you needed was a minimum of 3 years reasonable war service and some kind of Oxbridge degree. And so there you are, having read history or English or something useless, and you're by now in your 40s, and you haven't got the experience or qualifications that employers are looking for. You're all too old. There are sort of 5-year brackets. The commercial firms prefer people below 25 who are young and malleable. And gradually, as you reach 30, it's more difficult to get a job. And 35, after that, it's pretty well impossible. As for you, sir, he looked at me and said, you are 48. All I can is, it didn't quite say it, this, but the effect was something like, you'd better strangle your wife, throw your children down a well, sell your house and live in a bed street somewhere near, say, Earl's Court, and I can almost certainly get you some kind of job in the greater London area. But if you persist in living near Oxford, it's hopeless. There's only the university, and you haven't got the paper qualifications even for a preliminary interview. And there's publishing and printing and that sort of thing, but you've got no experience in that. And there's Rover and the motor trade, but you wouldn't last 3 weeks. You've got to be born and bred to the motor trade too. Even if I could magically get you a job in the motor trade, and I almost certainly couldn't. Even if I could, you just wouldn't last. They would gang up on you. People who'd worked their whole lives, whatever level you came in, somebody would be pushed down or kept down one post who might have hoped for promotion. So it's absolutely hopeless. And there's absolutely nothing I can do for you. Send your wife and children back to their grandparents and live in a bed sit in central London. And I said, rather crossly, well, I'm sorry I had the Biafran Civil War to start. And he said, don't waste your sarcasm on me. And don't bother to pester me again until you've been unemployed for more than 6 months. So I staggered out and crawled home. And for 4 months, I sent in application after application and felt rather like one of those 15-year-old applicants from Nigeria. And I eventually, with difficulty, got 7 interviews. I must have put in more than 50 applications, each one supported by the resettlement officer, but mostly they didn't even bother to answer. And gradually, over a period of 4 months, I worked out that the only way to get a job was to turn the conversation around to the problems which affected the man who was interviewing me and get him to talk about himself. And if you could do that, you might get him on your side. And I eventually ended up with three offers. And of all things, the shipbuilding industry training board. And since I'd been on the bottom end of the Sahara Desert for 20 years and in central Burma for 5 years before that, I knew absolutely nothing about ships, except that the rear end was round and the front end was sharp. So, but at least I got my foot in the door and managed to... I saw a vacancy in Oxford City, and I managed to persuade the selection board of Oxford City. There were six of us applying for this job, and of them, two were really good and had done a similar job in some other authority and would have been good. Two were adequate, and one was the statutory ethnic. And the other was me. And for some extraordinary reason, sometimes a selection committee is afflicted by a sense of collective insecurity, and they will employ the only one from outside the group of serving officers from other authorities, anyone who could have done the job well. And the job was to be the coordinating committee clerk of a great local government reorganisation. And I knew absolutely nothing about local government, but there is a Hausa phrase, suka ki dangari suka yera dabako, meaning they will refuse any of their own men but accept a stranger. And that's what happened to me. I kept saying I had an open mind and I would be a neutral committee clerk, every department you care to mention would be pressing for advantage, have somebody like me from the outside. And that succeeded. And when, after 2 years after the committee had done its job, I managed to step sideways into a committee clerk vacancy and survived till my 65th birthday, which got both children through fee-paying school, as I was cushioned by redundancy pay and accrued pension from Nigeria. And the practical child was at Headington Girls' School here, and she passed the 8-month course at Sandhurst and the short service commission, and the academic child I sent to Oxford High, and she got a place at Lincoln College reading classic greats and got a 2-1. And so on my 65th birthday, I tried very hard to soldier on. I had a job lined up for me to do a couple of months after my 65th birthday, because you needed full salary in the next academic year, otherwise you lost out. But they said they'd be held to pay with unions. You go on your 65th birthday, and that's it. So, and the day after my 65th birthday, as I lay in bed, not going to the office, suddenly everything that I'd done in Shanghai, Burma, Nigeria, what have you, came flooding back to me for no known reason I can think of. I hadn't given any of it a moment's thought, because to keep a full-time job when you really have been trained in Nigeria for the kind of administrative work which was used by the British government in pre-war, it was a bit of a job, and there was no margin. And the end of it all, what can I think? Now that I'm in my 80th year, the three things that stick in my mind are the fact that fear is the most powerful of all human emotions. It's capable of changing the whole character, the complete character. And secondly, a couple of lines from W.B. Yeats: things fall apart, the centre cannot hold, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The best lack all conviction, and the worst are full of passionate intensity. And finally, a couple of lines from T.S. Eliot. Webster was much possessed by death. He saw the skull beneath the skin, and breastless creatures underground lean backless in a lipless grin. And those are the sort of things wake up first in the morning that cross my mind, that sort of level of them. So I won't bother to come in on, in a silly sort of way, I vaguely thought that in 1967 things in England would be not very different from what they were like in 1937, because I'd been abroad in Nigeria, Burma, India, and Nigeria for almost all that time. But of course, England was completely and absolutely different. It was a sort of People's Britannia. It was no good having received pronunciation. No, I'm sorry, I haven't thought out. Let's see, it has been 14 years since I was put on pension from Oxford City Council, and I'm afraid I haven't thought out clearly what I feel about Britain today. So I'll just call it a day at that.
Could I just ask you about that remark you made about fear being so important? Which particular things in your own experience have convinced you of that?
First and foremost, the 1942 First Burma Retreat. People who looked the part, who were smart and good on exercises and tactical exercises without troops, and seemed fine, suddenly, because of the fear factor, broke down completely. Whereas unlikely looking chaps would sometimes be really quite good. And that was the foremost and strongest occasion, the 1942 Burma Retreat. The sudden, appalling realization that you could spend the rest of the war working on the River Kwai or something. And that had been a fantastic government miscalculation and absolute chaos all around. And then one's personal fears. In the 4 months before I finally got a job, I spent some time thinking I was never going to do it. And one of my colleagues never did. And he just went completely seed, had a nervous breakdown, and he just sat in his flat, unshaven, unwashed, doing nothing except helping himself to raw eggs whisked up in sherry. He just ate and drank that, which kept him alive, and he'd spent a year or two not getting a job, and his nerve had gone, and anxiety and fear for the future had reduced him to that. In a small way, all of us had that until we got settled. and then a certain amount of fear in Nigeria in the last 12 months there. There was no certainty that we might not end up part of what was euphemistically called an incident. There may be other reasons I can't recall to mind, but that's the one thing that I wake up thinking this morning.